Renouncing the Art Object by Lucas Soy. Article 1. Rich Artists.
No matter how far up the income ladder you go, artists are always poor. In 1981, novelist John Cheever was being paid $500,000 per book by his uptown New York publisher, Alfred A. Knopf. While downtown, Andy Warhol's Dollar Signs exhibition at Leo Castelli Gallery failed to sell a single piece. In 2010, poet Jay-Z's net worth was estimated at $450 million, and he was earning an annual salary larger than all but seven American CEOs. That same year, the Sunday Times estimated Damien Hirst's net worth at £215 million, or $140 million. Article 2. I am worth more than $1 million to my people.
Rebecca Belmore's performance outside of the Vancouver Art Gallery on September 11, 2010, worth Statement of Defense, made public her battle with Toronto-based dealer Perry Nadimi, who sued the artist when she asked to leave the gallery. Nadimi claimed that the gallery was in active negotiations to sell over $1 million of the artist's works and sought $750,000 in damages for wrongful dismissal, as well as unspecified damages for Belmore stopping the sale of her piece Megaphone to the National Gallery of Canada, shortly before it was to be shipped.
Outside the Vancouver Art Gallery, the artist ended her performance by gifting one of her pieces to chief curator Diana Ogaitis.
"Who is allowed to give and whose right is it to take?" Belmore asked. "It's about giving and taking, and the fact that art, not just the object, more the idea, belongs to me. Artists, I think, are very generous, and I wanted to publicly illustrate that."
Article 3. Le 1% c'est moi.
Andrea Fraser's article in the September 2011 issue of Texte der Kunst, Le 1% c'est moi, excoriates 25 high-profile CEOs and hedge fund managers who are also museum trustees and board members for their questionable business practices, including bribery, inside trading, and tax evasion.
Fraser details how equity markets increase the buying power of the rich and push art prices higher, as the wealthy outbid each other for rarefied property. Yet, she concedes that the increase in high net worth individuals participating in the art world has led to benefits beyond the market, with a direct increase in foundations, grants, residencies, and post-secondary degree programs.
Article 4. Goldman Sachs. Paul Sachs, son of the founder of Goldman Sachs, originated the first course anywhere in museum management, guiding students in the planning and arranging of exhibitions and writing catalogs in the 1920s. His unique seminar at Harvard attracted men who would eventually direct many of America's major art museums. Goldman Sachs' current CEO, Lloyd Blankfein, another Harvard alumnus, extends his interest in art only to the dollar figure. He was overheard bragging about only paying artist Julie Moretti $5 million for a mural to display in the lobby of the company's Manhattan headquarters. In 2011, Moretti's average price at auction was $17 million.
Article 5. Sovereign Debt. The Greek government currently owes a combined $87 billion to French, German, and British banks and cannot pay it back. The International Monetary Fund and the European Central Bank have approved two bailout loans that will finance its operations until at least 2021. The contemporary art world can help end Greece's debt crisis. France, Germany, and Britain own more than just Greek debt. Museums in their capitals of Paris, Berlin, and London hold the greatest collection of Hellenic marble sculpture anywhere in the world. All ill-gotten gains looted during times of war and peace.
An auction should be held of antiquities, such as the Winged Victory of Samothrace in the Louvre, the Pergamon altarpiece at the Stedelijk Museum, and the Elgin marbles of the British Museum.
European states could bid on behalf of their institutions to pay for their current holdings, thereby generating restitution payments to Greece while simultaneously canceling much of its debt.
However, this atonement for past transgressions would be difficult in Europe's current economic climate of austerity measures, and risk the final hammer price going to a sovereign capital with a spending power like Moscow, Beijing, and Abu Dhabi.
Article 6. Ruin Value.
19th century British art critic John Ruskin wrote, "When we build, let us think that we build forever. Let it not be for present delight, not for present use alone. Let it be such work as our descendants will thank us for." German architect Albert Speer, when planning the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, coined the term ruin value to describe designing a building so that after it collapsed, it would leave behind aesthetically pleasing ruins.
Speer was fond of using the Parthenon in Athens as an example. As the art world continues to be enveloped by mainstream society, it will be interesting to see how it handles the general public's value system of judgment based on money. Consumers focus only on the present value of their investments, so it is up to the producers of art objects to consider the greater meaning of their practice. The concept of ruin value, posterity, and lasting worth should be foremost on their minds.
This is a Soy Fisher edition, read by Carly Hefner.